Hey, everybody, this is Ken with the Overlay at Poker Podcast, brought to you by CCG Poker Radio. Our wonderful sponsors are Paramount Social Club and Chicago Charitable Games, the best places to play poker in whatever area those places play poker at.
Hey, that was Brandon. A good promo.
Yeah, it's not bad.
What's up?
We're in July, and possibly, I mean, events are happening in Chicago. Texas has been open for a while.
We're in what? We're in like half quarantine now. We're in like
quarter quarantine.
Quarter teen. I like it.
Yeah. It's a new TM. Quarter teen TM by Ken. What?
States are open. Events are happening.
Yep.
But it's not like we're going back to.
Things are different. There's a new normal. And that kind of leads us into today, because here in Chicago, where Brandon and I are currently recording this, or in the Midwest, we should say more specifically, it was kind of cool. Two things happened. One, I think Chicago Charitable Games, CCG Poker, was the only game running in the Midwest per poker room. Yeah? Pottawatomie, maybe?
I don't even think Potto was running, no. I think there's the closest place that you can go play is Detroit.
Ooh, Detroit. I always feel like
basically in Canada, and then it's
you might as well just go to Canada. Toronto. Have you ever been to Detroit?
Driven
through it? Anything?
I've driven. No, actually, I don't think I really have.
I've never been to Detroit. It's one of the places I've never been that I would like to go. I used to watch this this home like improvement show, and she would always buy houses in Detroit, and they were these beautiful big houses, and it was always really cool. I liked it. So I was like,
Detroit has some really rich areas.
Yeah.
I went to college with a buddy who was from like a nicer suburb of Detroit. He's like neighbors with Matt Stafford.
Ooh, nice.
Pretty cool. His Snapchat's pretty cool. But yeah, there's some nice areas of Detroit, and there's also some bad areas of Detroit.
There is, but there's nice areas and bad areas in Chicago. Any big city has both, but
that's true.
Needless of the socioeconomic distribution of major metropolitan areas, let's discuss what today's episode is. Today we are here for episode 20, Shorthanded Play and How to Improve Your Game While Playing Shorthanded.
More specifically, six-max.
Six-max, because as of right now, and the segue from COVID into this episode 20, shorthanded play, and really six-max play, because six-max is really kind of like super shorthanded, yeah? I don't know if that's not a real term, but I feel
super shorthanded, I don't think is the way to describe it.
I think when people think shorthanded, though, they think like seven, eight players, you know, out of a nine-handed cash game table, and probably around the same. I feel like 7 to 10 players is like one realm, like 4 to 6 is like 5 and 6 is its own deal, and then like four handed or less is like completely everything goes out at that point.
I think full ring would be 7, 8, or 9,
right?
Because there's a lot of 8 max going on these days.
Yep.
And then 5 and 6 is really 6 max, which is kind of its own.
There's changes.
There's definitely changes, and obviously there's even more changes. And when you get down to four and three-handed play, which is now final table, shorthanded. I think that's super shorthanded.
That's fair. That's fair. I will give you that.
Six-max is just six-max.
It's shorthanded.
But there's still,
I got you.
It's right in the middle.
There's
obviously
degrees to which we're discussing here. So again, the reason for this is that most of the poker rooms across the country that are open or planning to open are doing shorter handed games. Like, they're not going to the full ring games, nine players. They want to have, you know, 5 or 6 player max tables, so that way they can spread out a little bit more and you have less people in contact. You kind of creating these little bubbles in a poker room where if those six guys are playing at table number one, they're really not allowing for table changes and things of that nature that could kind of intermingle, right? I mean, that's a thing that's happening. Not everywhere, but it is happening. So the idea is that you're only getting exposed to 5 other players plus a dealer, where it's a little bit better in that sense. So don't know.
Yeah, I would say
it is what it is.
The average player that spends 6 hours there is really going to only come into contact with 3 dealers and maybe 6 to 10 players, depending on how many bust and get up and leave and stuff like that.
And that's a long session. Yeah.
Right. And you're talking about being, you know, in decently close proximity to a dozen players. Conversely, at a normal, you know, the horseshoe circuit or, you know, the horseshoe or even a CCG event with 100 players in the stack,
mm-hmm.
you are in close proximity to 60 to 100 players throughout the day.
So it's exponentially higher.
Right. You're really going from 100 players to 10 players exposure. So it's 90% decrease, which when you come to poker, I mean, that's as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, just the nature of it. Right. It's like, that's the best you can do, which I think is pretty good. But we want to go over today. We want to talk about, you know, what changes in the sense of how is your play change? How does your ranges, opening ranges, three bet ranges, does your buy-in change? Do you do, you know, what are the things that are different going into a, we're going to start with cash games, right, Brandon?
Yeah, I think we're going to start with cash.
We're going to kind of focus on cash games for the shorthanded play, and then some of the stuff will obviously carry over to tournament play. But like you said, in tournament play, if you're playing in a six max shorthanded tournament, you know, you're basically playing four or five, six handed the whole time, and then at that point at the final table, you'll go down. I always have a weird question. Why do they do one extra player for if you play six handed the whole tournament, and then all of a sudden for the final table, you go to seven?
I think it's because there's a huge disadvantage of playing three-handed compared to four-handed. Whereas when there's eight players, there's two tables left, it's four and four. You knock out a player, it is now four players on one table, three players on another table. So that is a severe disadvantage.
It's an advantage to be at the table with when there's seven players left if you're waiting to get to six in a tournament. If one table is playing four-handed, that is a huge advantage over the other table who only has three players. They're getting screwed royally. No, that makes sense. Correct. That's a good. Hey, you answered my question really, which is nice. Thank you.
I usually do answer.
Yeah, it's what you're here for. You're my advisor, my consigliere. You always should have people. You should surround yourself with people who are smarter and better in the industry that you want. I don't want to say you're smarter than better than me in everything, but as far as poker and strategy, you're my go-to guy. When I got questions, I hit up the BK Schwei on Twitter and like, hey. Hit me up. Is your Twitter account private now that your podcast famous?
Oh, no, I'm fully embracing it. I think I'm actually probably going to have that little blue check mark here in a couple months.
I'm going full-blown El Presidente. I'm just going to be like, fuck it. I'm not doing it. If Twitter asks, be like, no, do not put that check mark next to my name. I have a million followers.
I want that check mark.
Yeah, I want the check mark too. All right, roll it on us. Lay it on there. What are we going to start with? Give us some six-handed tips, Brandon.
All right, so let's just dive right into it. I think first thing, I'm just full on diving, not belly flop or diving. So first thing you need to know about six max is under the gun plus one, under the gun plus two, no longer exist. Right? I mean, they're gone. Those are the three spots that you are going to play your tightest range from is early position.
Oh, run that by me again. Under the gun plus one, and under the gun plus two. Those early position are now changed.
No,
right?
They're gone. Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah,
like, you're under the gun is the same as the low jack. I mean,
you just eliminated that entire book of poker secrets for any of the plays that happen in those areas, those spots. They just don't exist in a six-handed game.
Correct.
That's kind of dope when you explain it like that to a player that's like, oh, I'm not coming back. Because I've had a few people call me and be like, I'm not playing until we go back to full ring games. I'm like, that's cool. That could be like 2025. I don't even know when that's going to be.
More like 2021, but yes.
Maybe, yeah.
No, I'm optimistic. Next year, we'll be back to full.
Yeah.
But, so really, I think the reason that people don't want to play six-handed is because there's a lot less places to hide.
Ooh,
like,
that's
you
good.
Are going to get exploited more. You're going to have to fight more. You can't just play this rock solid. I'm going to wait for aces because I only have to pay a small blind and a big blind every nine hands.
The nits are punished. Punish the nits.
Not only, yeah, it's the nits and even the non-nits. You know, there's nits that win in six max, but because they know how to exploit people. It's the people that aren't playing very exploitative and the people that are just trying to hide around and let the cards win for them. Like, they are more exposed and vulnerable. And they get more beat up in these games.
So I wanted to use my one term that I'm going to throw out there before you do. Basically, what needs to happen is players' VPIP needs to go up, because if they have a low VPIP, they're going to be beaten up in these games because you can't hide, right?
Correct.
Bum, bada, bum, bum, bum. You like how I used the word VPIP, which is voluntary put in pot? Pooh, pooh, pooh.
I love it.
Yeah, that's it. I just threw out my big
zinger.
It really
is not a word.
I literally just, like... first quarter third down, I just ripped like an 80-yard fucking reception throw here. I'm dropping a bunch of F-bombs today. Literally throw like an 80-yard bomb and just nail it. I'm like, yep, I'm done. Take me out, coach. Send me home.
Season two.
Literally season two of the overlay. Oh, yeah, we're starting season two. We're going to introduce a new logo and stuff. We kind of got some cool things going on for that. So be prepared for that, folks. And when you notice a change, it's because we're in season two. Episode 20 is and now season two. Anyways, I just blew it. I just got out there and threw my haymaker and I'm done. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I'll keep going. Yep. So really under the gun is the low jack. And then you have hijack, cutoff, button, small blind, big blind. So really, I mean, these are the aggressive. I mean, the low jack is a little bit towards the middle position range in a full ring. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the hijack and the cutoff and the button, these are your primary positional position. I don't know if that really doesn't make sense. These are your,
I mean, it makes sense in the context.
Advantages. These are your position advantages. Like, these are the spots you want to take. Well, all of a sudden, those spots are up three out of your six hands. And then the other two of those hands, you're in the blinds, which is a whole nother, you know, you need to work on your blind play, even in nine-handed full ring. So really, it's almost like you have a good spot to play a hand.
Almost everywhere. Hand. Yeah.
Almost every hand. So let's work backwards, I think, is the easiest way to do it. So we're going to start with the small blind. So I think the small blind is where you're really going to be playing a lot of hands, whether you're going to be facing a raise from these guys that are opening before you, or you're going to be playing heads up small blind versus big blind. And so, like, I think working on small blind strategy is something that goes overlooked, but it's really important, because if we're just going to dive right into the strategy here, I think, really the small blinds, we're going to be wanting to either three bet or fold our hands in the small blind, simply because, and this is obviously player dependent, if we're going to go to some general strategy, you're going to want to be playing more hands with a wider range against the players you perceive as bad, and you're going to be playing less hands in a narrower range versus players you perceive as good. So staying out of the way and navigating around the player field of only five other players is really more crucial, because again, there's no place to hide. So if you're going to battle, pick your battles wisely and battle against the guys who aren't as good than the guys who are good.
I mean, that's a pretty blanket statement in general. If you know who the good players are and the bad players are, stay away from the good players and try to beat up the bad players. I mean, that's simple bully mentality. You don't bully bigger people than you. You bully the little guy.
Right.
Bully the little guy, folks. This, you've heard it here first on CCG Poker Radio on the overlay. We are encouraging you to bully weaker kids on the playground. The poker playground, bully the weak ones.
So from the small blind, why I recommend not calling so much is because you really want to either three bet or fold. It's because you want to take initiative in the hand, and you also want to have what's called like a range advantage, where if you're going to three bet all of your good hands, and the board's going to come ace, king, deuce, like, you are going to have a range advantage, because you are going to have all of the aces in your range, all of the kings, all of the strong cards in that range. So to make up from the fact that you're going to be playing the hand out of position, you're going to want to take the initiative and the range advantage into the hand. So that's kind of a strategical little tip. Nice. You don't want to go into the hand with, you know, jack eight suited from the small blind by calling the buttons raise, because what's going to happen is they have the initiative, they have position, they have the range advantage. You are batting, you are already way behind in the hand, no matter what two cards they're holding.
Right. Or what comes out of the flop. Yeah.
They could be holding jack seven and you have jack eight, but they're already ahead. Like, they are going to beat you more times than not in this hand because of all the other factors they have in their arsenal that aren't everything but their hand. So, you know, when the flop comes king 4-2 and you check because you got jack 8 suited and there's nothing you can really do, and then they bet, well, now it's like, what do I do now? Am I going to float with jack high? What if they have a king? I'm drawing dead. So you can really change up the dynamic of the entire hand played from the small blind if you are three betting jack eight suited instead of calling.
Nice.
So So strategy number one, from the small blind, three bet or fold when facing a race.
I just like the idea of saying three bet or fold, because I find so many different players, when I watch games or when I play, I notice how often people are just limp calling, and like a limp call literally could not be, I mean, unless you're setting up some kind of trap for later, but just the idea of limp call, limp call, limp call, that is not a profitable, you know,
nope.
plan.
It's loose passive, which is
the worst
style of play you can do, right. Especially in a six max. You can get away with
you're going to get murdered in that game.
Right. So let's now move. So, you know, in general, small blinds, we're out of position. We're going to play the whole hand out of position. Three bet or fold. Now, if it folds to you and it's small blind, big blind, this is another area that is going to be tough. So you're either going to want to play the whole, it depends on your big blind. If your big blind is some aggro guy that just wants, if it's Jordan Hellstrom,
who is on episode, what episode number was he?
Eight, seven, something like that.
Yeah, 7, 8. He's a two-time WSOP champ, and he is a freaking aggro. If there isn't, he's the aggro aggressive of aggro aggressives.
It's hyper aggressive.
Don't correct me. It's aggro aggressive of aggro aggressive.
Aggro, okay, sure.
But yeah, you're right. It's hyper aggressive. That's a better term.
So if it's Jordan in your big blind, you're probably going to want to limp your entire range because he's going to be raising 80%.
And episode 7 is what it is. I just looked it up.
Good job.
So you just have to be careful. If you're a small blind and it gets folded to you and you've got an aggro guy who's your big blind, you got to be careful of what you're doing. Conversely, if you've got a nitty player who doesn't really raise very often from the big blind, at that point you should be punishing, I like to say punishing the limpers, but that's the idea of punishing the, you know.
So they say, according to the Wizards, they say you're supposed to make it at least 3x, sometimes 4x.
Wow.
Which is a large sizing for these days. You know, usually we're in the 2.25 to 2.75 range.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, pounding into a full four big blinds is, again, you're going to want to give them less incentive to defend bad hands because you're going to be out of position. And they already have a full big blind in. So you don't want to just, you know, again, we're going to go with Jack 8 suited because it's right in the middle of range of hands that you can get dealt. And it's my favorite hand. We're even going to go up to Jack 9. You're going to want to make Jack 9 4x into these guys to get them to fold the Jack 10s and the Queen 7s and the stuff that you're behind because they're in position. And you want to de-incentivize them from defending and stealing their full big blind. So that's kind of my two small blind strategies. And you know, you're in the small blind once every five hands. So these are kind of small blind, big blind button are the crucial three.
I mean, this is literally why you're going to go through each spot on its own,
right, because
it
you're
needs
there all the time.
Right. You need to know what these are in order to improve your play vastly. All right, go ahead. So where are we at now?
So now I think we should move forward to the big blind.
Mm-hmm.
Big blind is going to be pretty easy. You're going to be defending a lot. You're going to be defending a ton because you already have a full big blind in. You're going to want to, again, three bet, not as much as the small blind three bets, but three betting is a good way to combat the fact that you're going to be out of position. You shouldn't really three bet as much against the small blind because you're in position against that player. So, but when you're facing the buttons and the cutoffs and the hijacks,
in general,
you're going to want to three bet a little bit more to take advantage. Again, you want a rage advantage. You want initiative in the hand. So as you can tell, three betting is probably one of the biggest things that you need to study with six max, because three betting really is going to be happening, I would say, 40% of hands. Someone should be three betting because of the nature of the game, because of the nature of six max. So really you can get exploited in a full nine ring game from mistakes from three betting, but you're going to be way more prone to making three betting mistakes when, you know, you're in six max, because everything's looser, everything's more aggressive, everything's about position. You're going to be facing a three bet 4 out of 10 hands. Like, so getting down your three betting strategy really is important. So obviously you're going to three bet. I mean, this is just blanket statements. The reasons why you three bet are obviously for value because you have good hands. Obviously for bluffs because you have to balance your range. Because if you're only three bet aces and kings, A, you're not going to be three betting nearly enough in a six max game. And B, people can easily exploit you by just folding every time you three bet, which you don't want. Because if you're in a six max game, you want action every time you get aces and kings. You don't want to make it blatantly obvious that you have a huge hand. And C, to isolate, because you're going to want to isolate the fish. You're going to want to isolate the guy who's too aggressive, especially when you're in position, but even more so when you're out of position. Build the pots against the guys who are going to make mistakes that you can outplay pre-flop, which is all stuff that people that are tight and people that want to wait for aces and kings don't like doing, which is why they're going to say, hey, Ken, I'll see you when we're back to full ring.
They're unwilling to change to the times. I mean, it's adapt, react, readapt. I was from The Office.
I was wondering. I felt like I had heard that before.
That was my Office shout out.
So let's see. Big blind strategy. And I just looked up some big blind strategy here on Google because I don't really know anything about the big blind, but we're just going to fake it till you make it. Big blind is the one spot where it seems like it's probably one of the most crucial spots because A, you have a full big blind in. B, you are going to be in position against the small blind, who we just talked about should be playing back a lot or folding, or out of position against the rest of the field. The problem is when you're out of position against the rest of the field, they're the ones that are raising with crap because they're on the button and it's six max, so they're raising every hand. So you're almost in a difficult spot. I know I said it was kind of easy to play big blind, but it's almost like you have the potential to be exploited every single time you're in the big blind. Because you already have, so you have a discounted price to call when facing a raise. This is why you can call from the big blind with a very wide range compared to other positions. So obviously that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then it says you can be especially loose against raising from players in the small blind since you are willing to enjoy positional advantage post-flop. So again, when the small blind is raising, this is why you want to make it 4x. Because when you're in the small blind, because when you're in the big blind, you just have the incentive to call. If you're going to double it or make it 3x, I'm going to flick it in there with any two cards in position and I'll play. Right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to be willing to play back at people a lot and get some three bets and four bets in here, because if you're not, it's not profitable playing.
Yep. And you're going to have to play around with your own ranges and what you feel comfortable with, because you know, these ranges that you can look up on Upswing or, you know, Run It Once or any of these things, like you still, like just because, like I'm looking at this hand range and 9-7 suited is in the defend from the big blind right here. Well, you have to be comfortable in playing 9-7 suited for you to put that in your range.
Right.
Which is, again, going back to it, why some people don't like 6-max is because they're not comfortable playing 9-7 suited. So you need to figure out, and like this is just blanket strategy, this is why player dependency and players really matter so much, because, you know, 9-7 suited is pretty easy to play against a guy who's super, super tight, because when you're either going to flop a good piece of it and he's going to miss, or, you know, it's kind of like you're going to hit and they're going to miss, or they're going to miss and you're going to hit. So one or the other is kind of going to happen. But when you're playing Jordan and he has the ability to take Jack Deuce suited, and when it comes Jack 9-4, well, now you got 9-7 suited. You're like, all right, I got middle pair. I got position. This is a pretty easy hand to play against. And now he's pounding at you with Jack Deuce. All of a sudden, you know, you're getting exploited and you don't even know it. And you're doing the right things by playing 9-7 suited and defending it. But you might make too tight of a fold because all of a sudden he pounds the flop and he pounds the turn, he pounds the river, and he had queen high the whole time. You just don't know. So it's stuff like that that you really need to kind of hone in on and get comfortable playing these weaker hands and, you know, show down pair of nines for third pair and be good and realize, wow, he was bluffing there with king four.
I think you hit something huge there. It's that you need to be comfortable winning with weaker hands when you're playing a shorthanded game, because the play, it doesn't get worse, but the cards get worse.
Right. Because all of a sudden, everybody's range is higher.
Right.
Everybody's range is wider, which means that all of a sudden, middle pair in a 6-max game is nothing like middle pair
in a full ring game.
Right. In a full ring game, a guy raises from early position. It comes king 9-4, and you got 9-7 suited. You might call one bet because, you know, maybe he's C-bet and ace queen or ace jack or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You call once, and then the turn comes a break. He bets again. Well, you're folding because you got middle pair, and you a lot of stuff beats you. Aces, a pair of kings, queens, right. Jacks, tens, nines, all this stuff.
So many things beat you, yeah.
Well, now you realize in 6-max that you beat a lot of things.
Right.
It kind of reverses. You are strong with middle pair, and now all of a sudden it's, sure, he can have a king, but if he doesn't have a king, I probably
I'm
have
good.
A
king. Right.
So, you know, you get, there's more coolers because all of a sudden nines versus tens, 6-max is a cooler. Whereas nines, you would think about folding because he's probably got tens, jacks, queens, kings, aces.
Right.
Well, now all of a sudden nines versus tens is a cooler where 9-max, full ring, queens versus kings is a cooler. So the threshold of everything kind of goes down because in general, everything is weaker.
Everybody's ranges theoretically, and you know, they should be getting wider. And in that case, you're going to have what we would think of as a bad beat when like, yeah, I got into a big pot with 9-7 and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, well, why are you in a pot with 9-7? Well, it's six handed and I was in the hijack position and I raised and, you know, I had, you know, I was the aggressor. I mean, there's so many different things you could talk about that normally wouldn't happen in a full ring game. You have to switch gears and make those changes. All right. What's the next spot, Brandon, after the big blind?
So we're going to go backwards now. We did small blind, we did big blind. Now let's start working our way backwards and go towards the button.
Thank God you're not a tour guide in general, because who the hell goes 1-2-6?
I think it would be more like 2-1-3.
No.
But yeah.
Okay.
Right. But I mean, basically the other way is kind of reverse is kind of hard because, and I wanted to start with a small blind because I think that is the most fun and the most.
Where in general, I feel like normally
when people are going to make the most mistakes.
Well, when you're playing in a full ring game, the small blind's like the not the worst spot to be in, but I feel like it's the least exciting spot to be in. Whereas in, you know, when there's less players at the table, that kind of changes slightly. It becomes a much more, you know,
exciting.
You can do a lot more from that spot. You can really put on some different plays that you can't do in a full ring game that you can now do being the fact that it's, you know, shorthanded. So anyways, on to the button.
All right. So the button is obviously.
I hate to interrupt you again. I saw a really funny meme where it was like
I knew it was gonna be a meme.
It was this hot guy. And I'm comfortable saying that. It's a hot guy. And he's asking a lady poker player, he's like, what's your favorite position? And her response is the button.
That's really
which
funny.
I thought was like just so funny. It's so good. Anyways, go ahead, because I can totally see a lady poker player saying the button and then any guy coming up with some crude stupid joke, and it's like, man, take it to the next level here. And that's next level thinking, which is what we're trying to get you guys to do with shorthanded play.
All right, well, so let's look at the button. So the button is obviously going to have your widest opening range of everything. And that goes that's the same for nine-handed play, right? You're going to have the widest opening range. So I'm looking at a button opening range. It's all the aces suited. Every ace all the way down to ace two suited. Aces down to ace nine off. It's got kings, king queen suited, king jack suited, king 10 suited, king 9 suited. King, queen, queens, queen, jack suited, queen, 10 suited, jacks, tens, nines, eight, seven, six, five, four, threes, twos. It's got jack, 10 suited, jack, 10 off suit.
Jesus.
10, 9. It's got 10, 9 suited all the way down to the worst hand of 5, 4 suited. So anything from aces to 5, 4 suited in all pocket pairs is going to be eligible to be a raise on the button.
Wow.
So then.
So if I'm looking at 4 or 5 suited on the button in a 6-max game, I should be betting.
You should be raising.
Right. I think bet as a thing. I think call is just a call. When I think bet, I think that's a raise. Maybe that's not a great way to do it. But to me...
No, because the bets, the big blinds are the bets.
It is. Flop. I just don't think of it as that. But maybe that's my own flaw. I'll start changing that thinking.
So it's weird because there's there's these weird set of there's this weird subset of hands when you're on the button that are too good. Let's go button and you're facing a race. Okay. The cutoff or the hijack or the low jack, whatever. One of them, they opened. It's on you. Obviously, aces through nines, you're gonna three bet, right? Let's just put that out there. Ace. Mm-hmm. And you're obviously gonna three bet ace king and ace queen and ace king offsuit and ace queen offsuit. Okay, we found our three bet range. Well, then we get in this weird range of those are the obvious three bets because they're super strong hands. You're gonna be three betting those from any position, especially the button. So then you get in this weird subset of hands that are too good. They're too good to fold, but not good enough to three bet. These are the very few hands that you should be calling with. And they're hands like King 10 suited and Queen 10 suited and eights and sevens and 8-7 suited and Ace 8 and 8-9 suited. So this weird, like, I have a good hand, but it's not really good, so I shouldn't three bet for a slam dunk. These are your eligible calling hands on the button. And it's really a small range because then you get worse. So it's according to this chart, it says ace nine and ace eight suited should be calls, but then ace seven through ace deuce suited could be eligible for a three bet because now the hand is not good enough to be in that call set. It's also not good enough to be raising for value. So this is how you construct your raising, your bluff raising range from the button, that these hands are weak enough to where you should be three betting in blocks. And this is how you get a balanced range. So I don't know if I can really say that. I wish I could post this chart so you guys can see it visually.
You can, but you can put it out on Twitter.
Basically, it's showing that aces through ace 10 suited, you should be three betting for value. Ace 9 and ace 8 suited, you should be calling. And then ace 7 through ace deuce suited, you should be three betting for bluffs. And when I say bluffs, I don't mean bluffing like, you know, bluffing like, ha ha ha, I have nothing, you're bluffing, but to construct a range of some great hands and some bad hands. These are the bad hands you want to have. Ace 5 suited. Also, 10-9 suited, 7-6 suited, 6-5 suited.
And the idea of being able to bluff with those bad hands is that if you actually go to showdown and show them, you can justify why you did it? Or that it just it makes more logical sense to your other players where they're going to balance you out, that sometimes you could have it, sometimes you can't?
Correct. It's okay. More of the latter. It's more of the fact that you want to be bluffing. You don't want to take ace deuce suited and turn it into a bluff because that's just a poorly constructed range where you're playing too loose and like you're just bluffing for the sake of bluffing. Mm-hmm. And like in order to have a GTO sound range set in stone, you need to have good bluffs. These are bluffs that are blocking aces. I mean, if you have ace deuce suited, you're three bet bluffing, but if you get called, like you can still turn your hand into a good hand. You can make nut flushes. You can make wheels that are going to be sneaky. You can make top pair of aces, which is good six-handed. But you want to construct it so you don't always just have ace king or ace queen or ace 10 or aces or kings in these spots. So you want to pick some hands that are weaker but still good to three bet as bluffs. Consider three bet bluffing hands with hands that seem slightly too weak to play, or that seems slightly too weak to play. Break even or slightly losing calls are usually perfect choices for three bets. So ace three suited, that's a losing call because the hand's too weak to call. But it's a profitable spot to three bet because it balances out your range.
Nice.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty interesting because really, according to this chart, there isn't very many hands you should be flat calling on the button with. It's again.
There really isn't.
They're in the green. It's deuces through nines. Deuces through nines. That's what? 2, 4, 6. That's 8 hands. It has 9-8 suited, 8-7 suited, ace 9 suited, ace 8 suited, and king 10 suited. That's it. Those should be the only hands you're calling with on the button.
Everything else you should be raising or folding.
Three. Yep. And now, like these hands that are in the orange, like the 5-4 suiteds and the 6-5 suiteds. Those say three bet or call. So those are going to be where, if it's Jordan, you might want a three bet because you're going to use your position and you're going to play beat aggression with aggression. Whereas if it's Patty Rich, you'll just fold.
Right.
Or defend. Whereas, you know, so you're going to want to pick those spots. And, you know, it's not just like, oh, every time I get 5-4 shooting, I'm on the button. I should be three betting. Like, no, that's not what I'm saying. Like, you need to mix those hands as many times as you raise with aces, kings, queens, and ace king. You need to raise with one of these other hands to be balanced. And that's how you keep every player on their toes and everybody from knowing what you're doing. Because half the time you show aces and half the time you show ace three suited or 7-6 suited. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, shit, what? How do I know what they have? And that's exactly what you should be doing. And you don't want to do it to the extent where you're going 100%. Because 100%, you know, 100%, now all of a sudden you're playing too many hands where you're just not going to make enough. You're only using position as your only position, and aggression can only go so far. You still have to show up with hands when
occasionally.
You show down.
Occasionally.
Right. Occasionally, you're going to have to still show down something. And, I mean, you know, unfortunately, you know, your two cards are sometimes going to have to get flipped over on their backs and shown. So it's kind of a fine line between playing every hand and playing no hands. This is a way to balance out a nice button range. So, again, the takeaway is you shouldn't be calling the button with these hands. If your hand's good enough to play, three bet him if the guy's aggressive. Because he, again, is going to have a looser opening range. He might be playing 90% of hands. So you need to be three betting here with 7-6 suited or ace two suited as a bluff. This is a three bet as a bluff, but again, if the guy calls, you are now in position with a very playable hand with a range advantage, positional advantage, and the initiative in the hand. You have five recipes. You have five pieces to win the pot. You have your hand. You have your position. You have your range advantage. You have your initiative that you three bet in the hand. You have put in his mind that you three bet with aces last time, and you could have aces again. So you have all this ammo, whereas the guy that is raising and then calling a three bet out of position with every hand, he's got nothing. He has no position. All he has is blind aggression, which I'll take all of your ammo versus the guy's blind aggression.
Right. Nice.
And you're doing, yeah. And you're doing it, like I said, I'm pounding this home, but you're doing this all with the guy having no idea what you have because your range is balanced. This only works if your range is balanced. That's kind of what I got to say about the button. So button, three bet a lot, especially against the aggressive guys. You should really not be flat calling that much on the button. And, you know, I want to say, oh, well, I want to play 7-6 suited on the button in position. Like, that should be a hand I want to play. Well, cool. Play that hand for a call against the tight guys. Play that hand for a raise or a fold against the loose guys.
I'm shaking my head as if people can see me, but I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you got to be able to choose between players being aggressive or timid, and you got to choose your openers, you know, to kind of go with what those games are happening. And it's funny how one thing to notice is once you label a guy aggressive versus timid or passive, it's weird because that person can change so much, because there's times when I play and maybe I'm losing a little bit, or I'm aggravated, or I'm not paying attention, or I'm texting my wife to let her know I'm going to be home late or whatever the case may be. You know, I can change personally round by round or even less to go from aggressive to passive just by whatever I'm doing. So you kind of have to pay attention to people as well to notice any of those changes, right? Because your play has to change based on which type of player you're up against.
Right. Agree. Yeah. 100% agree. Okay. So like you're, and I also want to say, it's not like you, when it folds to you on the button and you're in six max, like you don't have to take that spot every single time. Like you feel like you do and hold them, because you're going to get that spot in five more hands,
a lot more hands.
And you're also going to be presented with almost equally as good spots as the hijack and the low jack. You're either going to be hijack, low jack, or button half of the time.
I mean, you get position much more often when you're playing in a shorthanded game.
Right.
That's the benefit of it.
And you're fighting when you're out of position. You're combating the out of position by three betting. Nice. In the small blind and big blind, like we reviewed. So like you're gonna have advantages all the time. That's what's crazy about six max play is the hands. I think I can say this, and this might be a big takeaway. The hands rarely play themselves.
Wow.
And I kind of just
favorite thing
it,
to so say.
Was, yeah, the hand played itself. Well, yeah, when you got aces and you got queens and the flop comes deuce, 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 the hand plays itself. There's right. no skill. It's just
the cooler.
In six max, the hands really doesn't play itself because there's so many different outcomes that can happen. You know, like there's the three betting from the small blind, there's the button, there's the making it 4x, there's the button knowing that the hijack is loose and three betting him loose, and then the small blind realizing that both of them are leveling each other and they're four bet bluffing. You know, like that stuff just never really happens as much nine handed because you don't pick up on that kind of stuff. You know, if it goes raise three bet, you're in the small blind with ace four suited, you just chuck it, but you don't even think twice about it.
Right.
But in six match, it's like, man, this,
you gotta
guy's
think about
opened,
it.
This guy's open every single hand, and now the button realizes that, and he is now three bet him with God knows what, could be anything, and I'm sitting here with a perfect bluff hand in ace four suited. I'm blocking an ace. I got suited. I'm just going to put in a four bet here and see what happens, and it goes fold, fold. And you're like, oh, that's cool. Like, people, 80% or 90% of poker players never even thought about that, and that just worked.
I like it.
So, yeah. So
let's we're at like 41 minutes.
Yeah,
so I want to make
the
sure
other,
we get like one kind of like, you know, have the Brando. You're getting that buzzer sound at the Oscars. The music is starting to play. So
yeah,
you're going to have
I
to
mean,
get your speech out quicker.
I got you. Well, I mean, the low jack and the high or the low jack and the hijack are kind of your under the gun spots in this. They're just going to be those are your like take a breath. Get to fold a hand type spots where it's your tightest spot at the table. And sure, you're still going to be opening King Jack suited and stuff from there. But I mean, you can look down at King nine and King eight and King 10 suited and stuff like that. And King seven suited. And you can just muck those hands because they're kind of like your take a breath type hands where I just got through the blinds. I just got through my positional buttons. Those are going to be your spots where you can play tight and you're not going to get, you know, those are kind of easy spots to play. Those are just your general range. You need to look out for when you're going to get played back at by the button and the small blind. But in general, those should be your tightest spots.
Nice.
And that, yeah. So, I mean, that kind of really button and the blinds are really the three spots you need to take. And I know this is a lot pre-flop, but six max is a ton more pre-flop leveling, a ton more taking it down pre-flop. Pre-flop bluffing, it's a lot more pre-flop than going to the flop. In general, that's going to set yourself. That's going to set yourself up for good strategy. Obviously, we can go on for days on defending and middle pair and bottom pair and you know double barrel bluffing and you know delayed C betting and all kinds of good stuff that six max really changes. But the core of your three bet or the core of your six max play should be in your three bet range construction. And that's going to make everything a lot easier. It really is. Because if you go into six max trying to play every single hand, seeing flops with every single hand, you should be seeing flops against the fish only with garbage and staying away from the good players because you're just going to get outplayed. You're going to get put into spots that you've never been in before. And they're really, it's hard. And the only way you understand these spots is understanding the constructions of their range and trying to outplay them. Which is really tough to do with dog shit hands.
Nice.
So the easiest way and the simplest thing is get your pre-flop stuff down, and it's the same thing with PLO. You get your pre-flop ranges down, it makes everything easy. But when you get into PLO with the 7-6-5 deuce double suited, and you flop an open ender and a 7-high flush draw, and you're like, well, this is good, but if I'm getting it all in against somebody, he's probably got a better flush draw on a set, and but
maybe a bigger straight draw. Yeah.
Why am I playing 7-6-5 if I'm not going to play on the 4-3? You know, you're lost. And it's not because you're lost. And it's not because you're bad. Like good players get lost too because you're creating that situation for yourself to get lost. So in general, walk through the woods with the lighted path that's easy to walk through instead of taking a left through the dark path where you're going to get lost and have no idea and might end up dead.
Wow.
So that's it. That's my six max pre-flop tutorial.
That was good. I liked it. I sat and listened through a lot of that because I'm trying to think of how much I, you know, it's funny when I have good sessions with Pot Limit Omaha, and that's really the only cash game that I play on a regular basis or semi-regular basis. And it's exactly what you just said. When my pre-flop ranges are better, meaning I'm more able to fold that 7-5-6 deuce double suited, where I'm like, ooh, sexy, double suited. They go together. This is a good hand. That's like Ken's range card is like, A, are they moderately in the same range? B, do they have the same colors? And C, are they pretty? And I'm like, yes, let's make all of those things happen and we go forward from there. But I think you're right. When you're playing, you have to change your thinking to be a good Lord. You have to change your thinking on shorthanded play to be specific to shorthanded play, right? Because we talked about it so much, how players get different when they get shorthanded, especially in tournaments. I know most of this we talked about today was cash games, but I think shorthanded play is going to be the new thing for 2020. I think we might start seeing less players at the table. That's just something that's going to happen. I mean, in all honesty, if you think of it from the poker room stance, you know, they probably want, they like seven-handed games. Yes?
100%.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask the Venetian what's the perfect number that you'd like players to play at, and they'd say seven, maybe eight tops.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think we're going to have to get used to this shorthanded play. Well, thank you for listening. Make sure you hit that subscribe, follow, like, leave us a review. 5 stars only. If you can't leave us a 5-star review, hit us up on Twitter and let us know what we're doing wrong. We promise we'll listen. Moderately speaking, we love constructive criticism. Brandon, no.
Love constructive criticism. I do.
Yeah, I do too. I always encourage people when they ask stuff about the events at CCG and whatnot, and they're like, hey, you know, I got this really good idea. You know, can you hear me out? And I always do, because sometimes our best ideas comes from stuff like that. And then we wait like a month and then put it out and then just claim it as our own.
Oh, I'm the king of that.
It's the American dream. Take somebody else's idea, change it slightly, and put it out as your own.
Right, like the stack.
Like,
that was 100% Brando idea.
Yeah, it was.
I just took from Vegas.
Nice. No. From the Venetian, yeah. Actually.
Yeah.
Well, cool. That's going to do it for episode 20. Thank you for listening. Can we say that what?
That we stole the Venetians.
We didn't steal it. We just took an idea in the sense of, hey, let's give poker players a bunch of chips and longer blinds and better structure and call it a stack. Instead of deep stack, like that's not a genuine idea. That's just a really good idea, an implementation of good solid poker room strategery. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I'm pretty good at poker.
It's a compliment.
Yeah.
What do they say? Imitation is the most sincerest form of flattery, or something like
flattering,
that.
Flattering, yeah. That's what it is.
So anyways, thanks for listening. We will catch you next time, episode 21. Thanks for listening to the first episode of season 2, even though we'll still call it episode 20. New logo, shout it out. Let us know if you like it. Other than that, Brandon, you want to leave us off today?
No. You just put me on the spot. I'm scared. You got to do it.
Farewell, everyone. See you next time. Bye.